Welcome to the Friday Night Clive podcast with me, Clive Payne. In this podcast, we look back at the amazing charities, organisations and people we have chatted to over the past few months, all of whom have interesting and important stories to tell. Now, we're all aware that us chaps are not the best at looking after ourselves or for visiting the doctor when we think there's something wrong. Now, this week is National Men's Health Week. And what does that mean exactly? And what happens during the week? And what should we be focusing on as well? Tonight, I'm joined on the line by Martin Todd, who is the chief executive of the Men's Health Forum, to talk about the work that they do and how they support us chaps with their health issues. And he's on the line now. Good evening, Martin.
Good evening.
Thank you very much for joining me this evening. Martin, first of all, talk to me about Men's Mental Health Week. What's its key objective?
Well, it's Men's Health Week. It's all aspects of men's health. And it's been around for a long time now. We've been running it for 20 years in the UK. It was running for a few years before that in the US. And this year, what we're asking men to do is what we're saying to men after COVID, after many men stopped going to the doctor or maybe didn't take problems to the doctor that were worrying them or haven't been looking after their health enough, we're saying it's time for your MOT, time to check in on your health, your physical health and your mental health. Check if there's anything that might fail you, the MOT, but also check if there's a few advisories which give you a few ideas as to things that you can be doing to improve your health in the coming year.
That's a really good analogy, and that goes for men of any age. But for somebody like me who's 55, are there any key things or extra things that I should be considering?
Well, if you're 55, you're starting to get to the age where your heart might be more of a problem. Your weight is likely to be more of a problem.
Oh, yes.
You might be doing less physical activity than you used to. You still might be drinking a bit too much. Most men will have given up smoking, but there's still a few men smoking. So it is a good, you know, as you get older, that's also a risk factor for things like diabetes. So certainly I think one of the start points would be to look at your weight, your waist, because men put weight on around their waist, and that's particularly bad for diabetes. But also, check your mental health, check that everything is going well for you. You're getting to an age where you might need to keep an eye on your waterworks. One of the tests we suggest in our DIY MOT is if you have a wobbly gear stick, that can be a sign of a problem potentially with heart disease or other issues.
Right.
So there's a, you know, there's a range of things that we'll be saying for men to look at, because it's certainly in the 50s that men's health tends to get worse, and you tend to be at higher risk of heart disease in particular is the one that starts to emerge as a big factor.
Sure.
And it's also an age when men are going to the doctor less than women, even though there's really no particular reason why they should be,
other than
the pressures of work.
Generally, though, we're not particularly encouraged to go to our doctors these days, because you hear of so many people that find it so difficult to get a doctor's appointment, even now.
No, that's very true. And you can get some of the checks you need, you can do them yourself. Some of the checks you need, you can do via a pharmacist, which does make it easier. And local authorities and local health systems are meant to be starting again with the NHS health check, which is a way of, if you're eligible to it and invited to it, and it might be worth calling your GP to ask about that, of checking in on all your sort of on yourself and finding out whether you might have hypertension or diabetes or other issues, which if they're spotted early, you can do something about. But it is definitely an issue. And the other thing that is often forgotten about men is, yes, it's true that men don't go to the doctor as much as women do, at least until they retire, but we also get invited in less than women do. We're not invited in for breast cancer screening. We're not invited in for cervical cancer screening. We're less likely, we're not going in for sort of reproductive reasons in the way that younger women do. So we don't know the health system as well. We don't use it as much, and the health system doesn't tend to know us either.
Sure. Something I learned on a previous program, which I did about breast cancer last year, was that us chaps do have breast tissue, and obviously a lot less than females, clearly, but we do have it, and it's something that you have to watch out for.
Yes, I mean, men's breast cancer is growing. Every year, more men die of breast cancer than testicular cancer. because it's so unusual and so unexpected, and the numbers are still very low compared to women, it tends to get spotted quite late. But yes, you know, if you, one of the things we're suggesting to people is do check yourself all over. If something doesn't quite feel right, it doesn't do any harm to maybe call 111 or and just ask the question, because it could make all the difference. If you find something that's not quite right, you ask somebody about it and get it checked.
Absolutely. Tell me about then the Men's Health Forum and all about it, what you do.
Yeah, sure. Well, we're a charity that's been around since the 90s. We were originally set up by the Royal College of Nursing. We're actually a forum within the Royal College of Nursing and then became a separate independent charity. And we work on all aspects of men's health, so mental health, physical health. We look at diseases that are obviously for men, such as prostate cancer. But we also look at diseases that affect men and women and look at those factors which affect men more or may affect men differently. So heart disease, diabetes, most common cancers, men are at higher risk. And we've done work in the past looking at why that might be and what the implications are for what needs to happen. So we work in a range of ways. We are involved in doing research. We work to educate professionals about men's health issues and to help them work more effectively with men. We produce materials and information for men. So we in the past, we worked with Haynes in partnership, and we still produce health manuals for men. We have a man manual, a man MOT manual that give you ideas on how you can look after your health, which you can find on our website, www.menshealthforum.org.uk. But most of the information on our website is free, and there's also lots of free stuff that people can download. And we're also campaigning for change. So one of our biggest campaigns at the moment is to say that there should be a men's health strategy. There's due to be a women's health strategy, and that's a really good thing that we strongly support. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole bunch of areas where if a bit more thought was put into how do we engage men earlier, how do we do a better job of helping men prevent problems before they start, how do we design services so they work better for men who are working longer hours on average and commuting longer distances? How do we make sure that we have male-friendly weight management services and male-friendly mental health services, for example, which do, in many cases, need to be different to the ones that you might be offering to women? So we're campaigning for change. We're raising awareness of the issues that men face. We're doing research. We work in partnership with universities and other charities on particular issues. And we're also putting information out, making information available directly to men, but also to organizations that work with men, whether it's occupational health departments or the NHS or other people who need information to help get the word out about men's health. And actually, Men's Health Week this year, we've had an astonishing number of organizations downloading and using our materials, whether it's on social media or putting up posters or leaflets or other materials that they're using to reach out to men and help raise awareness of what they can be doing or what we can be doing to improve our health.
I've asked my next question to you to a number of health experts, mental health experts and general health experts in the past, but I'd be interested in your view from the research that you've done and, you know, how you, sort of, you know, you've been working with all this to date. Why do you think it is that us chaps are too scared, I think that's what it boils down to, or too macho to actually admit that something may be wrong or something's not quite right somewhere along the way? I'm not talking necessarily mental health now, I'm talking anything. And we're just rubbish at making that first step to go to the doctors. I guarantee you now, if I walked up into Briley Hill and asked any number of men, when did you last go to the doctor? Why have you not explored, when did you last check your own body for anything that's not quite right? They'd laugh at me.
Yeah, and that's partly because of one of the natures of, the traditional way of being a man is you don't show weakness. And you certainly don't show weakness to men you don't know. And that's also, I think, a factor in the workplace. But, it's very easy to turn this into why don't men look after their health? And it's a reasonable question. But one of the factors I always like to mention is that, you know, men go to the doctor just as much as women do the day they retire. And it's quite striking that the gap vanishes. So a lot of it is also, I think, about the pressures that people are under. We've done some research on this in the past, looking at why don't people ask for help, for example, about their mental health in the workplace, or why don't they ask for time off to go and see the GP, and particularly actually men with the worst health. They are concerned about the consequences. So it's very easy to blame men for not saying, I'm unwell, you know, I need to go to the doctor. But actually, men worry, and in some cases reasonably worry, that if they show weakness, if they are ill too often in the workplace, that it will have consequences. So it's very easy to get into, well, why don't men do it? I suppose another way of looking at it is, why don't we have a workplace environment and a culture that means that it's risk-free to be able to look after your health? And the example I always use, it's slightly tongue-in-cheek, is man flu as a concept, because everybody laughs about man flu, how pathetic men are if they're ill. Mm-hmm. What message is that sending about showing weakness? Mm-hmm. What message is that showing about asking for help? The truth is, it's an acceptable joke to make jokes about men's illness. And we all buy into it. Mm-hmm. But because we buy into it, one of the consequences is that maybe we don't ask for help, because we're used to the idea that somebody who asks for help, somebody who's ill, is a laughing stock. Mm-hmm. So I think there are quite a lot, you know, yes, there are internalized problems, and yes, men will always prioritize their work in particular against protecting their health. But I think it's also important to recognize that there are cultural pressures, there are work pressures, there are a range of pressures on men that mean that it's not always consequence-free to take time off to look after yourself, or to look after your family, or to look after other people. It's something that men, probably rightly, in many organizations say, this will have negative consequences, so it's not something I'll do lightly.
No, and that's where the element of risk comes, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
You see, the thing is, I mean, I know of an individual who has had, and is still having, a very rough time in their private life, and have been for probably, quite some time. And I have sort of said, you know, come and talk to me kind of thing. And they haven't. And there's only so much I can keep saying, you know, come and talk to me. You know, I can sort of, you know, support you, nurse you through this, so on and so forth. And they're not. And, you know, I feel like I'm flogging a dead horse, really.
Yeah, one of the movements that's been really successful at helping men to open up and talk, and I understand that, and I think it's brilliant that you do that, and your friend is lucky to have somebody who reaches out like that, and even though they may not respond, they will have noticed, I'm sure. One of the movements that's been really successful and has done really good work in helping people engage is the Men's Shed movement. And I'm sure you have lots, or quite a few, sheds in the local area. And that's what's great about that is it just shows some of the different ways that men connect, and that men get in a position where maybe they feel able to talk. And sometimes if you say, let's meet and talk about your issues, then that may not be the way that people feel comfortable starting the conversation. You know, if it's, let's go to the match together, let's do some joint activity, some shared activity that isn't about your problems, that maybe takes you away from your problems, that what that can do sometimes is create a space where people can talk. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly one of the reasons what, you know, the shedders, as they call themselves, would say about Men's Sheds is that often it just provides a space where people can just get comfortable, and when they're in the space to talk, there will be somebody there who can talk with them. But also it's the kind of space and environment where people can just get into that place. And sometimes it's things like shared activities that might provide the precursor to being able to talk. Great. It's not that always straight in, let's have a conversation about your issues. It might be, let's go for a walk in the countryside. Let's do something together that we enjoy doing together. Let's just do that. And that's it. That's the agenda. But then that might also give the space for other conversations to happen.
Sure. Your forum has been very successful to date. What do you think lends itself to the success?
Well, we'd always like to be more successful, you know. you know, we haven't got a men's health strategy yet, but we have done a lot to put some aspects of men's health on the agenda. We've done a lot on men and weight loss. We've done a lot on men and cancer. We've done active work in the past, for example, to get more men to do bowel cancer screening. And we've reached, you know, a huge number of men with our health information, and we continue to do so. And that we really value and enjoy. And, you know, and our editor and our creative lead on that has done a fantastic job at doing information that I think men find easy. Certainly I find it easy to engage with and understand. And it actually slightly comes back to, you know, though your previous question. We try and get our information across in a way we call shoulder to shoulder, not face to face. You know, that's the kind of mood that we're trying to get across. So we have helped, certainly through our information, you know, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of men in the past who've got health questions that we've been able to help them with. And we have also, I think, made change and helped continue to work to get change that will, I hope, lead to men having better health as well. So that's some of the success that we're pleased about, but we're not done yet. There's still lots to do.
Sure. I mean, I guess you've had some really good feedback from the men that you have supported. Can you give me some examples of that?
Well, we haven't provided direct service. We have provided direct service in the past. We used to have an online chat service, and that we used to get very immediate feedback. We do still get really positive feedback for the information that we make available and the publications that we get, just because sometimes people feel that it's just giving them the information they need in a form that works for them. That's certainly the objective that we try to. And we have, I know, at times in the past, you know, certainly been able to help people at moments of crisis, but we tend to do more now with signposting to other services that help people in those moments. And they do amazing work, and they definitely every day save huge numbers of lives. We're trying to change the system so that that more men have better health for longer, and not just men but boys as well. We were actively involved. There was a very good campaign run by actually our former chief executive for HPV vaccination for boys, which was successful, which we supported. And that's a campaign that will save, you know, in time, prevent large numbers of boys and men getting cancers that otherwise they would have got from that particular virus. So those things we wish we'd had more impact on. We tried really hard during the COVID pandemic to do more to raise awareness and get action on the extra risk that men face from COVID. Mm-hmm. So men at any given age are about 50% more likely to die from COVID than women. And we got some traction on that, and some traction. There were some groups of men that weren't getting vaccinated, and we did some work on that. But we always, you know, we're always trying to do more.
Now, you're a charity, as you were saying at the beginning, Martin. So how are you funded?
It's a mixture, and it's changed over time. There was a very happy time when the erectile dysfunction drugs came out, when they were looking for charity partners to help promote the idea of erectile dysfunction drugs, before they all went generic and you could buy them over the counter in the pharmacy. And at that time, we got loads of money from those drug companies. We don't get that money anymore. We used to get money from the government to do work for them, and we don't get that either. So,
see, the drugs companies make a fortune, don't they? So I don't see why they shouldn't do that.
Yeah, there are very tight rules on, rightly, there are very tight rules on how they can fund charities, and that's a good thing. I don't think we'd argue with that. It's changed. We get a lot more voluntary donations. We get a lot more donations from companies and individuals than we ever used to, particularly actually since COVID. So the work we were doing on that, and just the work we're doing generally, More people are supporting us now than they ever have before, and more people are making donations. We really appreciate that, and it makes a really big difference. And some of our publications now are sponsored by people who want to support our work, in one case, sadly, in memory of somebody. Mm. So we're getting a lot more from donations. And actually, we are also, our health information, we deliberately make it available to companies to use with their employees. And we've also got new types of training that we used to offer. We offer online training. So there's we offer training for professionals to help design services better for men. And we also have a Men's Health Champion program, which we started during the pandemic when we couldn't run face-to-face training and we weren't selling health information to people. And it was a huge hit. And it's really... a lot of people are starting to do that and sign up to it. So we're really pleased with how that's going. So I'd say now most of our income comes from selling health information that's good for men, useful for men, to employers and health organizations and training, backed up with a lot of people who give generously or fundraise for us. Or companies that give us money, and that's all hugely appreciated.
Sure. Now, interestingly, you say about support in the workplace. We spend more time with our work colleagues than we do in our family, and I think for somebody, an office environment, if you like, that you're more likely to spot if one of your colleagues isn't quite right, either mentally or whatever, and they may sort of disclose something to you, which they may not disclose to their family. So it's important to actually, put this training for infrastructure in place for employers, because they're probably in the best place to deal with it in the early stages.
Yeah, I mean, I think a good employer, a good enlightened employer that, for example, has a Men's Health Champion program or has a mental health first aid or other similar programs that teach people how to collaborate, work together on health, and also offers sort of confidential advice and counselling and other things is a really good thing. And we're lucky to work with a lot of employers that take their employees' health really seriously. And we work with them, to see how we can help them do a better job on that. Obviously, not all employers are like that, but the workplace is a really important space. One of the things we say to the health system and to health professionals is, and this ties back to our earlier conversation, is don't wait for men to come to you. For all the reasons we talked about earlier, that may not be a very good approach. It's important to go to where men are. And we've been involved in the past in doing programs with Royal Mail and in bus stations, reaching out to people to improve the health of men, where men are, where men are working. Yeah. And other organizations that have done work, for example, in football grounds, have had a great impact. So there is a thing, I think, about men's health, which is it isn't just about waiting for men to use the health system, because men don't know the health system that well and don't always find it very convenient or congenial to use. One of the other ways that's incredibly important is reaching out to go to where men are and making sure that services and information are available to men there as well.
Now, you've got a rather splendid online shop, haven't you? Tell me about the things that we can get from your online shop.
Well, there's a whole bunch of stuff there that you can get for free. So... we put all our free downloads into the shop, which is shop.menshealthforum.org.uk, although you can also find it from the main site. Mm-hmm. We have a section for Men's Health Week. So this year it's got lots of information about Time for MOT and the Man MOT information, and a new booklet or a downloadable booklet, free again, that we produced this week about our can-do mental health challenge, which is about connect with the C, be active, notice, discover, offer. I could talk about it a bit more if you want, but lots of ideas and ways of improving your mental health. That's free download. There's posters and materials that organizations can use. People can book training. They can donate if they choose to. And we also have our award-winning man manuals. And for people who are working in the workplace, we have toolbox talks and other things that you can use to help tackle and improve men's health in the workplace. So there's a lot of stuff there that you can either buy or download for free. If you're looking for information about men's health.
Lovely. Just give your website a mention again, Martin, if you will.
Yeah, so our website is www.menshealthforum.org.uk. But if you want to go to the shop, just change the www to shop.menshealthforum.org.uk.
Lovely. And for anybody that isn't an internet user, is there a telephone number that we can ring?
There is. It's 0330 097 0654.
0330 097 0654. I'm sorry. 0330 097 0654.
Yeah.
Lovely. Martin Todd, Chief Executive of the Men's Health Forum, thank you very much for talking to Friday Night Clive. That is your lot for this episode. You can catch the programme live every Friday night on Black Country Radio from 8 p.m. If you like our podcast, please subscribe by heading to blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcast or wherever you get your podcast from. See you very soon. This is a Black Country Radio podcast presented by Clive Payne and produced by Andy Caddick.